again, fellow travellers, and after a short break, welcome to podcast 152 in our series You Should Have Been There with me, Mick Webb.
And me, Simon Calder, actually today at Gatwick Airport for complicated reasons, which I think, to use our phrase last time, is a long story, which I won't trouble you with, because today our main topic is LGBTQ plus travel. Everything from friendly destinations and specialist companies to oppressive law. And whether safe travel for LGBTQ plus people is improving. To discuss these matters and answer some of the many questions, we're delighted to welcome Sophie Griffiths, editor and chief purpose officer for TTG Media. Hello, Sophie. An intriguing job title.
Hi, yes, thanks for having me. Just to explain what TTG is, for anyone listening that may not be familiar with us, we're the world's oldest and leading travel trade title for the UK and Ireland travel industry. We're a B2B publication, so that's a business-to-business publication, and we're read mainly by travel agents, as well as tour operators, cruise lines, airlines, anyone and anything to do with the travel industry. But our core readers are travel agents across the UK and Ireland. Yes, and in terms of my job title, yes, it is an interesting one. I'm assuming you're referencing the Chief Purpose Officer part. That was actually a new role created in January this year, and it's really around our purpose as a business. We exist to promote smarter, better, fairer travel, and it's that fairer piece. Promoting an industry that is kinder both to the environment that we're travelling to, but also the people working within it. And it's my job to uphold that culture and those values, and to challenge our business to make sure everyone across the team is doing that, which they're all doing, because it's something that's really core and really passionate for us all.
Right. Oh, well, hello, Sophie, from me. And thank you very much for joining us. And can I just ask, are you in the office at the moment or on your travels?
No, I'm at home, actually, rather than the office. My travels have taken a slight pause because I'm actually pregnant.
Yeah.
5 months pregnant. So my wife and I are grounded for a little while. But yes, hope to be back on the road at some point with a baby in tow, as well as our dog.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, well, that will be a whole new ball game, as we say. But do bear with us for a couple of minutes. I'm actually possibly even more than a couple of minutes while Simon and I address some of the messages that listeners have sent in. Rebecca Hulpen, regular contributor, tweeted to @YouShouldHaveBT, 2 podcasts in as many days. I can't keep up.
And that was because our last two podcasts, one a celebration of our 150th recording, the other a discussion of how much or how little preparation one should do before a trip, hit the airwaves on consecutive days in the time-honoured tradition, I suppose, of London buses or more recently, prime ministers. Incidentally, Sophie, I presume, because I've been lucky enough to know you for many years, you are an extraordinarily good planner of travel.
Yes, I would say we were very lucky in this job to get press trips and a little bit more ad hoc. But yes, I would say, and when it's my own trip, I like to try and plan it.
Yes, me too. Unlike Simon, I think. That 150th podcast, do listen if you haven't yet. Like all our episodes, you can find it online. Featured an extract from Simon and I arriving exhausted at a Pyrenean refuge, with me looking for a painkiller for my injured shoulder, while you, Simon, said, much to the amusement of Tim Coxon, another regular friend of YSHBT, "I'm opening my own painkiller, made by Cronenburg in Strasbourg." "Nice," wrote Tim, and this is how it sounded.
Very good. Help.
Good. Well done. Cheers.
Meanwhile, James Hatz tweeted, "Looking forward to hearing of Mick's Feve adventures." At this point, I should explain that Feve is the narrow gauge railway that runs in parts of northern Spain. Anyway, James sends a picture saying, "Here is the now closed León Feve station 20 years ago, with live music on the platform." And as well as a photo of a band playing on platform 2, James also has posted a few attractive pictures of the journey itself, which looks absolutely lovely. When we last spoke, you were intending to follow in James's footsteps. How did it go?
Well, it was splendid and filled with exciting uncertainty, just like the good old days of travel. You could only buy tickets in person on the day for the 8-hour journey from Leon to Bilbao, with the added frisson of not knowing where the new terminus, because the Leon station is, as James points out, it's being rebuilt, where the new terminus actually was. Though, luckily, the rail replacement bus did, and the views were absolutely extraordinary as we chugged very, very slowly through the mountains. Sophie, are you much of a railway traveller?
Do you know, I've had some lovely rail trips. I'm very lucky in that I've done the Trans-Siberian railway. Yes, we started in Helsinki, travelled to St. Petersburg, and then to Moscow, and then across Mongolia into China. And then I've travelled by train around China, Thailand, India. So I am very, very lucky. I love train travel. I think there's something so magical about being forced to do absolutely nothing but taking your surroundings, which we never get to do in modern life, do we? We never get to stop. And train travel makes you do that. So yes, I'm a big fan.
Well, I think you should be possibly the chief railway purpose officer, Sophie. But on the subject of lovely views, Gary Make has harked back to one of last year's podcasts, number 111, Room with a View, and expressed his liking for Rachel's picture with the accompanying tweet, pretty spectacular, out of the bedroom window, Marriott, Falls View, Niagara.
Well, it does look lovely. Have you been there, Simon?
Not actually to the Marriott, but I know Niagara very well. Indeed, as we speak, we've just learnt that the Americans have dropped the 18-month requirement for any overseas visitors to be fully vaccinated before going there. And that took me back to November the 8th, 2021, when I was at Niagara queuing up effectively on the Rainbow Bridge to walk into the US on the stroke of midnight, the first time that anybody had been allowed in there for, well, the previous 18 months or so.
You are a 21st century Livingston, I do declare. Now, we often ask and beg even for audio messages to our site at anchor.fm, and I'm delighted to say that we've received one from someone I met while in the Pyrenees some years ago. Well, let Gordon Stone from Huddersfield explain.
Hi, Mick and Simon. Mick, you may remember in the depths of your memory that in 2010, you walked the last week or so of the GR10 with Steph and your two sons, and you were walking with a Huddersfield Town supporter called Gordon. That's me. I've been back to the Pyrenees a few times and plan to walk the GR11 from Andorra to the Mediterranean in about 5 weeks' time, but snow might cause me some issues there. I'm also trying to learn some Spanish using your excellent Talking the Talk book. And for my sins, I'm also now the editor of the Strider magazine for the Long Distance Walkers Association. It'd be great if you wanted to include anything in that. The previous editor did include two articles that I wrote about the GR36 in the last two issues. And finally, the buses in Pyrenees Orientales were only €1 back in 2010, and they're still only €1. Thanks very much. Been loving your podcast. Bye for now.
Well, I remember that Gordon was, and I'm sure still is, an extremely fit fell runner, and he had to reduce his trekking pace considerably to chat with us about walking the GR10, about football, and about Northern Seoul. And that was on the last few stages of the GR10, the Great Pyrenean Trek. But I'd love to hear more about the even mightier GR36, which I didn't know about until we got Gordon's message. But it cuts a lengthy furrow right across France from north to south, starting at Ouistreham, where the ferry to Caen docks, and goes all the way to Andorra. Wow. And that's a walk, isn't it? Over 1,000 miles, I think. And it would also be great to follow Gordon's progress on the GR11, which, Simon, you and I have got quite well lost on during a couple of forays along it.
Yes, and of course, Grand Randonnée, sorry about the pronunciation, mixes much better, is the French side of the Pyrenees. The Spanish thought, well, if they're going to have a GR10, we're going to have our own Gran Recorrido number 11, if I'm not mistaken. And that's why you've got a parallel one north of the Pyrenees. It's the GR10, south it's the GR11.
Yes, and there's one over the top, called the HRP. But it's good to be reminded of the incredible value of bus travel in the Pyrenean region. €1, and that's for as far as the bus goes.
It certainly is, yes, and that's maybe you could be chief bus officer one day, Mick. Anyway, Sophie, chief purpose officer and the chief purpose for our podcast today, apologies for the lengthy parish notes. It's definitely time for today's main topic, which I'd like to introduce with an extract from a message we were sent nearly 2 years ago by Johnny N. This was June 2021. He wrote, "With it being Pride Month, I thought it might be interesting to explore the topic of where people who are LGBTQ+ go to travel. I'm a recently out gay man who's 32. Up to a few years ago, I never had to think about where I went on holiday. I've been to North Africa, North America, Southeast Asia, Europe extensively. And sadly, I now have to think very clearly about where I am allowed to go and what consequences I could potentially face if I were identified as a gay man in certain countries. There are some places that one wouldn't necessarily associate with homophobia. I'm not an activist. Indeed, I'm still coming to terms with a lot of things that have changed in my personal life over the past few years. Hopefully, once I become more confident about my sexuality, I'll be able to be a better voice. But it could be an interesting podcast topic."
Well, it certainly is, and we have finally got around to it. So thanks very much, Johnny, for your message. And Sophie, does Johnny's experience strike a chord with you?
Yeah, it does. Firstly, congratulations to you, Johnny. It's a brave thing to come out. And I was actually quite late, not as late as Johnny, but compared with my peers, I was sort of at the age of 25. And it's interesting, having not been out, how it really does make you think differently and you see the world in a different light, you know, particularly where you live, let alone when you're travelling. In terms of kind of going abroad, if you're going with a partner, you suddenly have to be very aware of the culture that you're travelling to, of the country that you're travelling to. And it can be small things, it can be large things. So remembering not to lean over and give your partner a kiss in public, because you can tell if someone's doing it in a friendship way or in a relationship way. And I don't even mean a big smacker on the lips. I just mean, you know, holding their hand or giving them a quick kiss on the cheek. It's just something you might do naturally in your home country. Suddenly, it's a world of difference if you're abroad. And then you have the classic bed problem. So I've been abroad where hotels have made assumptions and they've given me and my now wife twin beds, and you have to go and queue up at reception and go and explain that you'd like a double bed, and you see their perplexed face and you've got a queue building up behind you and you're trying to basically explain to them that you're gay, and you have to come out. And that's the difficulty with being LGBT, is that you are constantly coming out every day. And sometimes it's absolutely fine, and you know, and I don't mind it, and I wouldn't say I'm particularly an activist, but I'm very passionate that people should be who they are and allowed to be who they are. So I won't shy away from it, but it can be really daunting for people, and it can be really uncomfortable, especially if you're younger or you've recently come out. So it does strike a chord, and I think it would probably strike a chord with pretty much every LGBTQ+ person. And I should say, you know, I'm not speaking on behalf of the LGBT+ community. All I can say is what it's like to be me, a 37-year-old white lesbian. You know, the experiences of black transgender travellers will be totally different again. And it's, you know, I think it's just being mindful of that everyone will have different experiences.
Well, I suppose it's particularly important then to be forewarned. And Johnny mentioned in another part of his message an article in Forbes magazine about friendly and unfriendly places, which I suppose we could also call safe and dangerous for LGBTQ+ travellers. And I had a look at it, it ranks countries, safest countries, for example, and this was from March 2023, so it's quite recent. So number one, Canada, number two, Sweden, number three, the Netherlands, number four, Malta. And then if I read up from the bottom, the lowest ranked ones, they are South Sudan, Tanzania, Tonga and Qatar in reverse order. So that's bottom up. I wanted to ask you, Sophie, whether you think it's possible to rank order countries like this in a very accurate way.
I see. I don't really think it is. It's interesting that, that you named those countries at the bottom. I don't know what they're basing it on. They'll have their own criteria. But how do you rank a country? Is it based on actual laws or on the culture? I'm surprised that Saudi wasn't at the bottom. They still have capital punishment for homosexuality. Brunei, the law, it's written in law that people will be stoned for being found to be homosexual. That's not mentioned. So what are we basing it on? But then there's also perception. So the Caribbean, for instance, you know, there are huge hangover laws from the Brits. They're often perceived as being anti-LGBT, but things are changing all the time. So Antigua changed its anti-LGBT laws back in July last year. As recently as December 2022, in Barbados, same-sex acts were criminalised until December, where Barbados has now changed that. And even in 2018, while that law was in place, they still held their first Pride Week. And they had activities, you know, raising awareness and acceptance throughout the country. So I don't know. I think it's understandable that people need to do their research. And, you know, this is where I would say I would always advocate for people to use good travel agents to help them with that research. And travellers have to feel comfortable knowing where they're going and investigating things themselves. But I think it can get uncomfortable if you're ranking countries, because it's what do you base it on? And you know, and I say all of this, and I've been to Russia, I've been to a gay bar in Moscow. Would I advocate other LGBT people to go to Russia? Probably not, but I would say if you feel safe, you know, that's something I wanted to do. I wanted to experience it. So I think it can get dangerous when you're sort of ranking, but you know, people must do what they feel safe.
So much to pick up there, Sophie, if I may. Can I a couple of things? You will know, and I will know, that there's many, many destinations, and I'm thinking here perhaps of the UAE, specifically Dubai, where loads of LGBT people go on holiday, and everybody knows it. Loads of actually heterosexual couples who are not married go on holiday, share rooms, all of which is technically illegal, but a massive blind eye is turned. And I'm interested in how you feel about that.
So again, I think for everyone, it's a personal choice. So would my wife feel comfortable going there? I don't know, actually. We've not really talked about it. It's not, I've been to Dubai, I've seen it, I'm very lucky to have seen it. I wouldn't say it's top of my necessary holiday list, just because I have seen it, but I don't know if I would want to go there as an openly gay couple. But that said, you know, there are lots of places. So the Maldives, for instance, technically, you know, they have laws that say same-sex activity is prohibited. But I know several holiday companies that will sell Maldivian holidays to same-sex couples because they have good relationships with the hotels and resorts and individual islands that they know customers will be safe, and then they know that people will be accepted. And then there's the argument that the more LGBT people travel and that eyes around the world are opened up to acceptance and understanding that LGBT people are just like everybody else, you know, that can help accelerate change. But then, you know, it's not an LGBT person's job to necessarily accelerate change. They just want a bloody good holiday that's where they're safe. So it's all down to personal preference. And I think that's where the difficulty is. It's just making sure that you're informed and that you've done your research and you've booked with a good travel agent who can also support and advise you on that too.
And can we ask what specialist companies are there out there who can help LGBTQ plus people?
Yeah, so there's lots of great independent high street travel agents. I think it's always worth speaking to your local travel agent. Outofoffice.com is a specific LGBT travel agency. And they do specialise in the Maldives, and they've got great relationships. If you're thinking about cruise lines, I'd love to give a shout out to Celebrity Cruises, because they do a fantastic job with the LGBT plus community. If you're gay, you can get married on board. They do Pride at Sea parties. You know, they're very focused on diversity and inclusion. Kioni's done a lot around LGBT travel. And just to bring it back to trains and to rail travel, Eurostar are really keen supporters of all of our LGBT work that we do at TTG. And so they, you know, they go big on Pride as well.
If we concentrated on Europe, Sophie, where are the most welcoming queer-friendly places in Europe where you wouldn't have that kind of concern about a simple act of like holding hands?
Yeah, do you know, I would say always always be aware of holding hands. You know, I live in London and I'm always aware of my surroundings. So I'd never want to say, this place is totally safe and you'll be absolutely fine, because there are horrible people that are homophobic people that live everywhere. But Europe, has done a lot of great work. Malta, you mentioned earlier, they've done some fantastic work in this space. They've partnered with us on several of our own LGBT events. They're really keen to get the message out there that they're warm and welcoming. Spain and Greece have both done a lot of work on the LGBT side. I wouldn't feel uncomfortable personally traveling there. Berlin is absolutely amazing as a city and is particularly liberal and very welcoming. Stockholm, they have a fantastic pride. In fact, all of the Scandi countries are very welcoming when it comes to LGBT. And they also have some fantastic prides there. And there's obviously lots of world prides. Maybe we'll come on to that. Yeah. World pride is a whole other kettle of fish.
What about the good old UK?
Yeah, I mean, I feel perfectly safe here. I'm from a little town in Cornwall called Newquay. And I loved it when about 3 or 4 years ago, I went down in August and they were holding their own little pride. And that would never have happened when I was growing up. And I loved that. And the whole town came together and there's a little parade. I took my nephew down there. I would feel perfectly safe. My wife and I honeymooned in the UK, actually. It was during COVID times. We took our dog. We went to the Lake District. We did the Scottish Highlands, the Isle of Skye. And people couldn't have been more warm and welcoming to us as a newly married lesbian couple. So, yeah, I'm going to big up the UK as well.
That's excellent news. But look, this also affects your editorial coverage. You've been very vocal, I am glad to say, about not featuring in TTG Media a number of nations for a variety of reasons. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, I'm really proud, and I think the team are really proud, actually, that we have a statement in the front of every issue of TTG. We're a monthly publication, for those people listening that aren't aware. We have a magazine that comes out every month. And at the front, we have a statement that says, TTG will not promote in our own products any destination where, based on recent evidence, members of our team would not be comfortable to travel to for fear of arrest due to their sexuality or profession. So for us, that's destinations currently like Qatar. It's destinations like Saudi Arabia, which remains one of the few countries where homosexuality is punishable by the death penalty. I say that, and actually, I was doing some research ahead of this podcast, and I noticed that actually yesterday, so on the 1st of May, there was an update to Saudi Arabia's tourism website. So there's a question on there now that says, are LGBT visitors welcome in Saudi Arabia? And the response, interestingly, reads, we don't ask anyone to disclose personal details and never have. Everyone is welcome to visit our country. Now, that's an update. That's quite a big change. Pink News have reported on it. It's difficult because technically, if you're LGBT and you're living in Saudi Arabia, the law says you could still be executed. So I feel like that has to change before LGBT people will be wanting to holiday there. Perhaps they want the tourist dollar. I think they're going to have to work a little harder if they do want to embrace change. But for us, it's something that we as a team are incredibly proud of. And, you know, I have traveled to many, many countries and had a fantastic reception. I personally do not feel comfortable traveling to any destination where LGBT people on the ground can be executed for simply being themselves. And I think there are many others on the team that would feel that way too. So it's a statement we're particularly proud of.
I will just say that I'm at Gatwick Airport, actually, not to catch a plane, but because I'm on my way back from Brighton, which I think was absolutely the first LGBTQ+ friendly city in Britain. I remember back in the 1970s, okay, you weren't alive, but me and Mick were, and within just a few years of homosexuality for men being decriminalised, you had, in the King and Queen, a proper gay pub. And that was absolutely tremendous. And as you will know, Brighton, I think, probably still holds the gay crown, if I may. Is that fair?
It does, although Hebden Bridge, the lovely village in Yorkshire, is seen as the lesbian capital of the UK.
Is it?
So, and I think too often LGBT people think gay male, and I'm just going to wave the flag for lesbians everywhere, because we're here too.
They should be twinned, shouldn't they?
I will start and train.
Yes. Interesting. And can I just mention something else which happens to me increasingly when I'm travelling with a male friend? We are generally these days, I would say, assumed to be a gay couple and given a double bed unless we specifically ask not for it, which I see as a massive step forward. I think it's fantastic that that's the assumption. It's not correct, but it's great that, it is just so, two guys traveling together, they're gay. That's let's accommodate them in the best possible way.
Simon, is that around the world or predominantly Europe?
I would say Northern Europe. So certainly the UK, places like Germany, the Netherlands, not, for example, North Africa.
Right.
Yet.
Sure. Yet. Exactly. The day is young.
I guess, Sophie, a really important part of changing people's attitudes is to do with pride. You mentioned your hometown of Newquay having its own little pride. Where are the best pride celebrations around the world?
Yeah, so I'm going to give London a big shout out because we have a fantastic pride here. There's World Pride as well. So we have our annual Pride celebrations in various different cities. But we've actually missed World Pride for this year. That was already in March. That was in Sydney. The next one is in 2025 in May to June, and it's in Washington, D.C. That sounds like that's going to be a fantastic one. I'm very lucky to have done Pride in New York, which is a fantastic one as well. They go all out. Stockholm does a brilliant Pride. But I mean, I mentioned Newquay. It's worth mentioning that actually lots of cities, especially in Europe, smaller cities, not just your capitals, have their own Pride. So if you're of the LGBT community, or if you're not and you just love a fantastic party, it's well worth just checking when the local prides might be, in if you happen to be visiting a various city, because it's a fantastic experience. I have lots of straight friends that love coming to Pride. I should give a shout out to South Africa's Cape Town as well. Apparently, I've not been, but apparently they have an epic pride as well.
And from my researches, I should give a shout out to Malta for Euro Pride, which comes to Valletta this year between the 7th and the 17th of September, and which I gather is a pretty good experience as well.
Yes, good point. I should have said Malta because they've done so much fantastic work. And, you know, Malta is a Catholic country, and yet they've really gone all out to embrace the LGBT plus community. So, yeah, you're right. Massive props to them. And that Pride sounds like an absolutely fantastic one to be at.
Oh, well, thanks so much, Sophie Griffiths, Editor and Chief Purpose Officer, TTG Media. I wish you very well, with your pregnancy and indeed with your travels, plus one. And next week, I'm going to be bringing you up to date on my great, though narrow, Spanish railway adventure.
Well, I expect to be in Hong Kong and bringing you the latest from East Asia. Until then, from me, Simon Calder.
And me, Mick Webb. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, and thank you for having me.